wow.
Jennifer, I'm an alcoholic. And I didn't want to say too much when I was getting my my cake because I want to save everything I need to say for the main time. I want to thank John and Randy for asking me to speak. It was a last-minute thing, which is perfect for me because if I had had time, I would have overanalyzed it because that's what I do. I spoke a couple months ago at the VA, and Molly encouraged me to ask for an engagement to speak here because she said I was great. And I was pretty good, but I'm pretty sure everybody was on Thorazine, so it was really, really easy. So it was, I was relaxed. And during Christmas time, it seems like the meetings thin out, so this is a good practice for me. Well, let me share a little bit of what it was like for me. My sobriety date is December 4th, 2000. And it's like nobody gets sober around Christmas time, so you know it's a God thing because I wouldn't have planned it that way. I was brought up in New Jersey. I know the Jersey Shore. I don't know if any of you see that TV show. That's where I was brought up. And, you know, nobody, I really didn't know what alcoholism was. My family had isms, but the alcoholism wasn't the one that they chose. There was gambling, there was overeating, there was drug doing, but not alcoholism. So it was a foreign concept to me. I did know that when I was younger, there'd be family parties. See, I was brought up in a household where I knew that there was a God of my understanding. I knew that there was, but I just didn't know how to channel it because my mom was a strict Catholic and tried to bring us up as Catholic. The problem there is she married a Jewish guy. And so I would have the very strict Catholic saying one thing and then my Jewish relative saying something else. So I was very conflicted about religion. And I knew, but I fundamentally knew, like they say in the big book, that there was a God. I just did not know how to tap into that. And, of course, the Jewish people like to drink a lot, so, you know, seders and everything. So there'd be alcohol around, and
it was forbidden for me.
My mom always said, this is something that you can't partake in. You know, and all the little kids would get their little glasses of wine, and, you know, so I knew that there was something wrong with alcohol, but I didn't know what it would become to. I didn't know what it would mean to me later on. Oh God, I'm nervous. So I've always had an ism. I knew very early on, probably about 4, that I was different. I knew that everybody had the answer to something, and I didn't. I knew that there was something missing. And my parents were pretty young when they had me. They were kind of hippie-like, you know, it was after the Vietnam War, and when they got married in New Jersey, they decided that they were going to hop in the car and take a ride, and wherever it broke down, that's where they were going to live. And the car broke down in Buffalo, and that's where I lived. And that's where I was born. And I don't remember a lot of it, thank God. But I do know, truly deep down inside, I hate the cold. I hate the cold weather. So when I was about 3 or 4, we moved on to back to New Jersey. My mom is a very controlling, dominating woman. And I love her, bless her heart. You know, this program has taught me how to have a relationship with her and let her be who she is. And so she told my dad they were going to live back in New Jersey, and my dad agreed. My dad's the opposite. He's extremely passive. He just doesn't care. You know, all he cares about is what's going on in his world. And he'll extend a little courtesy outward, you know, every now and then to let you know that he cares. But he doesn't really go out of his way too much. So I had the over-controlling Catholic mom and the really laid-back Jewish dad. And that explains why I'm here. So my life in New Jersey. Growing up, I just never felt like I fit in. And I knew that if I, even when I was drinking, every now and then as a young child, I didn't really have, I wasn't around alcohol a lot. That's a good thing because I just knew that when I did drink, when there was a social event that would come up and there would be alcohol around, I wouldn't drink just to have a couple cocktails. Like all the kids would sit on the pier and they'd have a couple of these little beers. And I would think automatically my brain was like, what's the point? What's the point of having those little beers just to sit and maybe have two or three and feel buzzed? I don't know what buzzed is. I don't remember ever feeling buzzed. Mine was always to drink because once I started drinking the alcohol, I got that warm feeling in my stomach and my feelings, I feel like I knew the answer or that I didn't care that I didn't know the answer. And I felt part of, because I just never really felt part of. So when I was about 14, my ism took me to a place where my ism turned into a guy named Michael. And he's very important to my story because I was obsessed with this Michael guy. He became my alcohol. And all through my high school years, he gave me the drama and the chaos that this alcoholic needed. And when I was 17, I said, I'm going to marry that guy. I know I'm going to marry that guy. And then I ended up marrying him. And he joined the Navy, and he moved out to California. I was still in New Jersey. I really just thought, well, you know what? I'm not happy here. I need to get out of here. So marriage just seemed like the easy way out. And of course, he was telling me, when you're in the military and you're married, you just get so much money, so we'll be set. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, great. You know, that was perfect for me. So I got married, moved to California. And automatically, I felt like I was in heaven. I knew that this was where I belonged. There was something always missing, you know, you know, everybody loved the town I was from in New Jersey, and everybody loved New Jersey, but I didn't. I hated it. When I got here, I felt that this is where I belonged. So I got married, and I felt like, what the hell did I just do? I can't believe I'm married. And I was 19. And so I said, well, how do I fix that? Well, I think I'm going to have a baby, because that'll fix that. If marriage didn't help any, then being a mom will help. So I was married, had this baby, and I still felt empty. And I never really got the skills early on in life to deal with feelings. When a feeling came up when I was younger, my mom would just say, oh, that's not true, or you're just kidding. So I really had the sense that what I was feeling was bad automatically. So I try to push it down or just get rid of it. So when I'm thinking, I have this baby and this husband, and I don't feel good, it's me. It must be me. And I remember one day my mother-in-law came, and we had this cabinet full of alcohol. And I just took a shot, and it was like a liqueur of something. Like it was blueberry schnapps. But I remember feeling my mood change, and it was like I got the power to deal with the stuff that I couldn't deal with, that I didn't know. The feelings that would come up, I would just feel this rage inside me and this anger, and I would hold this baby, and I would love her, but I didn't feel that love. And I knew that this was my baby to protect, but I didn't feel that I knew how to do that. I just knew that there was a huge part of, there was just something not there. And I knew that there was something bigger and better, and I didn't know how to tap into it. So my ism, I turned to food, or the lack of it, and this is a very important part of who I am today, because I developed an eating disorder when I was probably about 23, and I thought that was my new ism, because the skinnier I got, people would comment and say, oh, you look really good. And that was something I thought, well, if I look really good, then I'm going to feel better inside. So I got pretty sick. This eating disorder took me down pretty quickly. And by the time I was, I would say a year into it, I was hospitalized, and I remember I was going to the bathroom one day, and then I collapsed in the bathroom, and I woke up, and it was 2 hours later, and from my neck down, I couldn't feel anything. And so I had my brother, who was there at the time, call the ambulance, and my parents, who had just moved. Oh, that's another interesting part of the story. My parents at that time, my mom figures she's like me. This is where I get the thought process from. My marriage is falling apart. My dad had cheated on my mom, and she found letters. So she said, well, we're going to move to California. That's going to fix everything. That's where I get it from. So they sold their house. They sold all their possessions. I have a sister who's 2 years younger than me and a brother who's 10 years younger than me. And they thought that a geographic, and that's the, you know, when I came to AA and I heard that term geographic, I could automatically relate because, you know, that's what they were trying to do. They were trying to move to a different location to have, to fix what was broken, to fix, and that's not, you know, that we all know that that's not going to fix anything. So they moved here, and I had kind of like a breakdown, I guess. I don't know. I wasn't eating. I was trying to care for this baby. Had this husband who I could not relate to at all, who was in the military, and he, you know, come back and forth. And I felt really bad. I just felt like I had ruined my life. I had this baby. I'm ruining her life. And this guy who's, you know, a pretty decent guy, but he wants a wife. He wants somebody to stay at home, cook and clean, and dedicate themselves to family life. And I just wasn't there. And I had a lot of guilt for a long time about that. And so after the collapse, and I was in the hospital for a while, and I had a potassium deficiency, the doctor said that he'd never seen anybody with so little potassium survive because I was paralyzed for a while. And wouldn't you know it, once I got out of the hospital, that still wasn't enough. That still wasn't enough to get me to switch my behavior. I dabbled in the therapy thing, and I just thought, this isn't for me. So as my marriage is falling apart, and I'm about 89 pounds, and I thought, this is how life is. This is the cards I've been dealt. And I'm just gonna play them out because I don't know what else to do. I remember one night I couldn't sleep, and we had this liquor cabinet, and my husband had left the house. We'd gotten into fights. We got into really good fights. I mean, they were pretty violent. We would throw things at each other, knock down shelves. It was not uncommon for glass to be broken all over our house. And it was not uncommon for us to fight in front of our child. You know, that's what she knew of. That's what I knew of marriage. That's what I thought marriage was. Just because I didn't have the skills to communicate. So I took that shot of rum one night, and I thought, you know, this feels really good. I think that I found the answer that's been missing. It's not getting married. It's not having a baby. It's not controlling and enjoying and not enjoying my food. This gave me the ease and comfort that they talk about in the big book, and that's what I felt. And I made some phone calls, and I was very calm. Took another shot. Felt even more relaxed. Well, I guess you could say I was buzzed. Despite the fact that I didn't know what buzz was, but I felt like I can get stuff done. And the next morning, I felt fine. I got up and went to work. You know, it was great. I was able to take care of my daughter. I was able to handle being married. I was able to be a better employee. I was at this time. I wasn't really into going to the college thing. Some people are really, really good students. I'm not one of them. I just didn't really have the interest in going to school. So I went to a vocational program for dental assisting, and I just did that barely to get by. My life wasn't like, I didn't know that you had options or choices. I didn't know that you could say, oh, I want to be a doctor when I grow up. That stuff never occurred to me. It never occurred to me when I was younger to say, you know what, I'm just going to see how life is in California, get in a car, drive, and come out here, or apply to a college out here. That wasn't options that clicked in my brain. And I thought I was to make decisions to survive, not to be happy and to make my life better. So I went to this dental assisting program for a while, and I got a job in an office, and I met a bunch of women that worked in this office when I was an extern, and we all became really close, and they became my drinking buddies, and we drank and we partied, and meanwhile I have this little baby that I'm trying to take care of that, thank God my mom moved out to California because she was taking care of the baby. It's just like everything, my life was so chaotic. All I cared about was going out to party, going, you know, drinking and looking the way I think I should look to be happy. And I'm never, like, I'm always out seeking something, but I'm never getting to it. So, of course, that's going to fall apart. And it all fell apart. You know, it's really hard for me to share how my life was because that part is, like, so clouded in my head. How it was for me, I mean, I remember the basics, how I had a family, couldn't cope with the family. You know, I tried to make it by in life, and I thought, oh, you know, because I'll smile and I'll be nice to somebody, of course I'm going to get what I want. And it worked for a long time until it didn't work anymore. And so I started drinking more and more. My husband left. He, of course, he's going to leave. You know, there's no, I had nothing to offer him. And when he left, I felt relief. And I was able to drink more. And I still had my daughter. And so I'm trying to put her to bed and cope with life and be a mom. And I just couldn't do it. You know, it's like I just fell apart. So he met my sister's friend and they started dating. And they became really serious. And one day he took my daughter and he didn't return her. And I felt relief because I felt like, okay, now I can just drink into oblivion. And my drinking, it wasn't about going out and having fun anymore and partying and going to the clubs and going, you know, going. I had my nights. Like Thursday night I would go to PB. The weekend I would go to the gas lamp. And, you know, it wasn't about that. It became me drinking my bottle of vodka on the couch. And through this whole thing, my parents' marriage is falling apart, and my dad's trying to save me. But when, with my daughter gone, with my responsibilities gone, of course I can't hold down a job like that. I drank, this is where the fun stuff happens. I drank into oblivion. And I wasn't drinking, there was no question in my mind that I was drinking to socialize. It was all about just getting as much alcohol in me as possible. It progressed so much. I wasn't feeling good about myself. I was starting to get bloated. I was shoplifting. That was an interesting habit that I had. And what's kind of funny is that my husband, he was in the military. So I decided one day I was going to go down to the base and steal a bunch of stuff. And I just thought, I had this mentality like, oh, nothing can happen to me. I'm different. You know, I have something that's going to get me out of trouble every time. And it wasn't God. It was just this sense of entitlement that I had. So I stole a bunch of stuff, got away with it. Went back, stole a bunch of stuff more, got away with it. So one day I said, I'm going to steal a TV. And it wasn't because I needed the stuff. It was just because I had that ism. I had that hole in my gut that I needed to figure out what fit in there. So I walked into the Navy Exchange, had this TV on a shopping cart, and I'm wheeling it out. And I'm thinking, they're not going to stop me because I look so confident. And this lady's like, ma'am, where's your receipt? And I was like, I lost it. And I'm proceeding to wheel out. And she's like, no, security. So, you know, I guess the military works differently. I was up on federal charges for that one. And I just kind of ignored it because I had other things to do. When I went out, I used to drive drunk all the time. And that's scary because I think now that I'm so cautious, you know, somebody like me is out there threatening my safety. And so I was coming home from the beach one day, and I wasn't as drunk as I normally was. And I thought I was driving pretty good. And I was hungry, so I pulled over to a shopping center, and I was going to get something to eat. And the security guard said, ma'am, your tire's flat. And I said, oh, okay. So I don't remember really what happened, but I do know that he was helping me with my tire, then he disappeared. Then a couple minutes later, two cops show up. And they were like, ma'am, we have a description of you, a car like yours driving in and out of traffic. And I just kind of, I surrendered. I was like, yeah, you know, that was me. So I went to jail that night. It was my first experience with Las Colinas, my first experience. They were driving me. I lived in La Mesa at the time. So I'm back in the cruiser and I'm driving and I'm thinking that they're going to take me home because I learned my lesson. I thought, there's no way there's a jail out in Santee, but that's where they were taking me. I was thinking, I'm going to, when they drive me off at my front driveway, I'm going to thank them and say, yeah, I'm never going to drink and drive again. But no, I spent the night in jail. And, you know, it was like there was not a lot of consequences to that. There was consequences, but they didn't apply to me. So I just kind of let that stuff go by the wayside, and I never took care of it, never went to the DUI classes, never paid the fine. I just didn't have the tools to deal with that. And plus I thought, you know, it'll just be swept under the rug, and I'm sure with all paperwork, they're going to forget about it. And I like to write lots of checks that I didn't have money for. And the Navy Exchange was like a great place to do that too. So they contacted my ex-husband. They were like, your wife is out of control. She's writing a bunch of checks. She shoplifted. And he was like, you're never going to see our daughter again. He just was, he was scared. And I was scared too because I didn't know that there was anything else. So one day, I'm drinking into oblivion. My dad knocks on the door and he says, you can't live like this anymore. And he took me to the Navy rehab, or the Navy hospital, actually. And I detoxed for a while. Then I got to go to a very, very nice recovery home, or a 28-day program. And it was called Vista Pacifica. And that was my first taste of how sobriety was like. But I didn't have any interest in it. I mean, I didn't get it. It's like everybody was just kind of like getting off of what they were on. And I never did any drugs, but I would have if I could have found them. But for some reason, I just never ran into them. I mean, I would have just done anything to not feel I would have done anything to feel different. So in Vista Pacifica, there was structure. There was meetings in the morning and meetings at night, and then you would socialize with people who could relate to what you were talking to. But I was different. I wasn't like you guys. I had an eating problem. I wasn't an alcoholic, although my whole life was falling apart. So I stayed in the 20-day program, and I knew once I got out of there I was going to drink again. So the 20 days comes and goes, and I get out that night, I drink. And my car blows up. As I'm driving it, it catches on fire. And I'm drunk in the car, and I'm thinking, is my car on fire? So, yeah, it was. So anyway, that was December of I spent the millennium in rehab in Vista Pacifica. And that wasn't where I thought I was going to be, you know, because everybody was talking about the millennium, how everything was going to change, where are you going to be? I was in rehab, and that wasn't what I had pictured for myself. So that year, that whole year started my, I like to call it my recovery tour, because this is where it began for me. This is where I got a clue. After I left Vista Pacifica and I blew up that car, I went to a recovery home, and I was thrown out of there because I had vanilla extract and I was drinking it, and they caught me, and I was like, so I couldn't believe they caught me. I was like, I have it here for cooking. I'm not going to drink. This is not enough. But, you know, it's like consequences. What are consequences? So then after that, I got thrown out of there. Then I went to a detox in Escondido, and it was pretty scary. There was cops bringing people in, and they were like, look, this is the program. You can stay here, and this is what the rules you'll have to follow. I'm not doing that. So I called my dad, who's the awesome enabler that he is, and I'm like, get me out of here. So he got me out of there. He sent me to go stay with my mom for a while, and this is about February. So I stayed with my mom in February, and she sent me, she's like, you know what, your best friend who lives in Ohio wants you to come stay with her, so she's going to try to sober you up. And I thought, okay, because she had seen me drink. When I went out, a lot of the times I didn't drink or I hid it because I didn't want people to know how much I was drinking. So I drank when I got home. So she's like, you're not an alcoholic. So I go to Ohio, and all there is to do there is drink, really. And so I remember she would say, here, have a couple. Oh, that's when Zima was really popular. So we'd get some Zimas, and I'd have a couple, and then I'd go to bed. Everybody would go to bed. But then something triggered in me, like that started the craving, and I need more. So I would drink the rest of the pack and then go to sleep. And eventually that got too much for her, came back to San Diego. You know, to make the long story even longer, I went back to my mom's house where I started drinking mouthwash because she took my ID, thinking that I couldn't get any alcohol without ID. And let me tell you, mouthwash has so much alcohol in it, and it makes you hallucinate. Now I was starting to endanger myself and endanger the lives of other people because I would be passing out and waking up a day later. And so then, I don't know how it happened, but I decided I was going to go to a hotel room and just drink into oblivion. So I had some money. I stole some money from my mom, went to this hotel room, and drank and drank and drank and drank. And I just wanted, I didn't want to kill myself because I was afraid, but I didn't want to live like this anymore. So on the last day of that drinking spree, I woke up, and for some reason, County Mental, that kept going in my head. So I said, I'm going to go there because I have nowhere else to go and no more money. And I went there, and they were like, ma'am, you're an alcoholic. You're not, this program is for people who have other issues. But I wanted to stay there, so I told them I was going to kill myself. So, of course, they have to let you stay. So they let me stay there. They let me go to a crisis house after that. This is by the summertime. This is how I was spending my summer of that year. And I went to County Mental. I went to the crisis house. After that, I went to 1111 Island Street, which was kind of fun. You know, that was really the end of the fun. Well, I had no clue what life was. I just had no clue that there was anything more than this. I just thought it was going to play out to the end. So in Island Street, they got me to a recovery home, and it was in the ghetto. And there I learned how to get up in the morning, make my bed, take a shower, have relationships with other people. I remember they would sit on their bed reading the 12-step or the third step prayer, and I would hear the words of that prayer, and I would think, if only I could be connected to that. And I couldn't, you know, I wasn't connected to that. I wasn't connected to anything, but I really, really wanted to be. So I had all these life functions, and I got a job, and it was a really good paying job. And it was, I started dating a guy, and I was like, oh, okay, my life is okay now. I can control this. But I didn't want to control it. So I moved out of that recovery home, and I got my own little apartment. And I was, that was it. You know, that was it for me. I'm okay. I don't need recovery anymore. And I'd go to meetings, and I couldn't really relate. It just seemed like everybody didn't want to really be there. They were there because they had to be. They were in a recovery home, and it was part of the criteria. They didn't really want to be there, so I didn't really want to be there. And that's what I thought AA was about. So I'm drinking in my apartment. I said, you know what, I have all these skills, but I'm miserable. My life is not happy. I don't know what's going to make me happy. And the guy that I was dating was in recovery, and he was going to meetings all the time, and he was happy, but it never occurred to me that that was, you know, that should be part of my life. So I thought, I'm just going to end it. You know, I'm going to end it. I went and bought a couple of bottles of vodka, and I just drank in my apartment for a long, long time, for about 2 weeks straight, where nobody could get a hold of me. And one morning, I remember I woke up. This was December 3rd. I woke up, and I said, you know what? I bet you if I lay down right now, I could die. I looked out the window, and the clouds looked like heaven. And I said, you know what? This is it. I could die. I can end this all. I can end this misery. And I laid down, and all of a sudden, something switched to me. And I said, I want to fight. I know there's something more than this. So I made a couple phone calls, and I laid down, and I waited. And I started seeing people come up from the floor. I was shaking. I was seeing visions. I knew that was a DTs, because that's what happens when you drink as much as I did and you stop like that. And I could have died. That's what they told me later at the hospital. But the next day, when I woke up, I knew something had shifted. And it was time for me to get to work. So I went to a meeting out of the blue, and I met a bunch of people who were laughing. And I was like, really? I didn't know that AA could be about this, because I was always so different. And people had, you know, watches on and rings, and they were working, and they didn't have court slips. They were there because they wanted to be there. And that concept was so foreign to me. And I hung with a group like you guys did, like you were talking about. By the way, I remember that boat. That was a pretty scary boat. And thank you. I don't know why you got in it, but I'm glad you did. But a bunch of people got sober the same time I did. And they would go to the movies. They would want to do things. And I just didn't know how to be part of. But I went anyway. And the more I went, the more I did things, the more I felt like, you know what, this is what it is. And you guys talked about God. And you guys talked about, you gave me a big book right away. And I didn't understand it. And I had a sponsor who early on came to me and said, or a woman who really, really changed my recovery. And she said, you can come to my house every Saturday night and bring the book. The first time, if you forget your pen, I'll lend you mine. The second time, if you forget your pen, go home. And I was like, whoa, that's kind of harsh. But we got into the book, and we went line by line. And I remember she said to me, here's the most important line, I think, in the big book. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. And I wanted to understand that. But the more I stayed sober, the more I did things. It was all about the fellowship. To me, it wasn't like I was so interested in coming to the meetings. It was about the fellowship. And I started hearing my story. And I started feeling like, this was what was missing in my life. It was you guys. It was the steps. Once I started getting to the steps, I did the steps, all 12 of them, pretty quickly to save my life. I didn't really uncover or discard a lot of things. And that happened. That the longer I stayed here, I got into a relationship early on in sobriety. And let me tell you, let me put it this way. My amends to that guy is to pretty much stay away from him. But that relationship was so pivotal for me, because I had about 2 or 3 years of sobriety. I didn't know how to have relations with anybody. let alone being in a relationship with another guy. So when we broke up, I was in so much pain. And this was like the make or break it point for me. Like, what am I going to do? I'm feeling all these feelings. What do I do? So I got a couple sponsees. And I met another group of people who were doing a lot of things. So I started hanging out with them. I started actually listening to other people. I started going through the steps with other people. And that's when I got it. Like, if I can get through this without drinking, I can get through anything, because that amount of pain was the first time I had ever felt any amount of pain in my life. Even the fact that I lost my daughter and my husband and that whole life, I think that day that I wanted to die and I looked out the window, I think I did die. I think who I was, that person did finally die. And I emerged as a person who was empty and could be filled with the right stuff now. I got a second chance. I totally believe I got a second chance. And I don't know why I'm so lucky. You know, we don't all get to make it. And then I had to do things from scratch. I had to go back to school. I wanted to be in marketing and business, so I started learning how to... I went to college, got an associate's degree. I'm working in I love my job today. I love getting up every single day and going to my job. I had to find my ex-husband because after he got remarried, he took off and took my daughter with him. And I had to do steps to get back to her. I had to be a grown-up and walk through things. And all of the decisions that I wanted to do that were my best thinking, and I ran it by my sponsor, she'd be like, no, I don't really think that's such a good idea. So I was broken. I didn't know what else to do. I figured she knew more than I did. And I had this defect of people-pleasing, and I didn't want her to leave me. So I listened to what she said. And slowly but surely, the way God wanted it to be, it happened. And that was how I saw how God changed your lives. I saw how a decision I was going to make but didn't make because I talked to you and God speaks through you guys, I saw how that worked, and I developed my relationship with God. And as I got more into the program and more into my life, living life on life's terms, knowing that the feelings that I felt the first time I could get through and not drink, and the feelings didn't kill me, and I had all these tools to deal with it. You know, I really did read the book, and it's funny. I go to a step study, and the big book and the 12 and 12 we read on cycles, and I've been going to the step study for 10 years, and it never gets old, because every time I pick up the big book, there's something different that I read every single time, and it applies to what I'm going through at that time. And I think, you know, this is magic, and I feel like I know I know more about joy and happiness than a normie knows, and really what I've learned in sobriety is there's no such thing as normal. Everybody has something going on, and we get the tools to be able to deal with it. We get the tools to be able to look at it in the face, feel it, do the tools to let it pass and move on. So I developed this relationship with my daughter that was above and beyond anything that I could have ever wanted, and it was because I listened to other people and not what I wanted to do. Of course, she's 17 years old, and she hates me now, but it's the kind of hate that's good, because I'm actually really happy about it, because it's normal. It's like normal teenage stuff. It's not because I'm not in her life. It's because I am in her life. I really, really try to be the best Jennifer that I can be. I'm not always. I make lots and lots of mistakes, and that's when I feel like the mistakes I make and the more vulnerable I am and at my lowest points, that's when I learn more. And that's when I get that sense of who I am. And you know, today I can tell you that I can look myself in the mirror and like what I see, and it's not just an outside thing, it's from the inside. And that hole that was in there, it's now filled with God and filled with my new life. And I would not trade this life for anything. And I don't know how, from being that little girl who was so scared to being who I am today, how did I get so lucky? I just have to, I can, bad things have happened in sobriety. Good things have happened in sobriety. But I just know that there's nothing today that is going to make me pick up a drink over it. And thank you guys for being patient, and have a good night. Thank you.